Okay, so we now have we have two more sessions left for our evidence. Recognition as the first step. Organised, Gavin. Over to you. Your panel is yours.
Okay. So in this session, we're going to be talking about artisanal and small-scale mining. So I'm going to give a bit of an introduction to the sector. And then two panelists are going to be sharing some stories about the sector. So I'm Gavin Hilson. I'm a professor at the University of Surrey. I've been doing research on artisanal and small-scale mining for about over 15 years now. And yeah, I'm just going to give you a brief overview of this sector, which is the largest and most significant, important rural non-farm activity in sub-Saharan Africa and many other parts of the developing world. A lot of competing narratives when it comes to small-scale mining, or artisanal and small-scale mining, or ASM, as we refer to it as. Policymakers haven't really warmed to the sector. It's always been an uphill battle in policy discussions and trying to get people to pay more attention to the sector and recognize how important it is. Most of the discussion to date has been negative. Even though there's a lot of positives associated with the sector. We tend to assess what we see and formulate an opinion based on what we see. And what we tend to see is an environmentally degrading sector of industry. There's a lot of child labor in the sector. There are a lot of other types of social ills we see in the sector. And we tend not to ask the question why enough. Why is this sector performing in this particular way, and why does it exist in this form altogether? But as we've done more and more research, we've realized that, well, hey, this is a very, very important sector of industry. It's providing a lot of people with jobs. It's generating not only a lot of employment, but it's contributing very, very positively to national mineral outputs. When we talk about employment alone, and we use the conservative multiplier effect that's used by the World Bank of 6, we're talking about significant segments of particular countries' populations. If we look at Ghana, for example, where I do a lot of work, at least 1 million people are employed directly in this sector. And if we take a look at the number of people who depend on it for their existence in downstream industries and so on, that's another 6 million people. The same applies to Tanzania, the DR Congo, countless numbers of people, the list goes on. These operators are a part of very, very complex supply chains. We also know that the sector, based on the research we've carried out in the past 15 to 20 years, that the sector is linked to poverty, that a lot of times the people we encounter in this sector are there because there's nothing else in terms of jobs. We've been championing this smallholder or small farm first narrative for ages in policy, believing that supporting agriculture is this panacea. It's going to solve all the poverty problems in Africa that we see in rural areas. In many cases, smallholder farmers are branching out into mining to generate that disposable income to buy these fertilizers they need for their farms and other crucial farm inputs. So there's this recognizable kind of livelihood diversification taking place, of which ASM is a significant part. We now know it's a very, very complex sector. There's a number of different people in the sector for very different reasons. I've met people with university degrees, people with master's degrees, people who are trained teachers, in addition to that sort of smallholder farm base. So it's a very, very complex sector in terms of its composition, eclectic group of people. I always say that it's one of few places in sub-Saharan Africa and other parts of the developing world where you can see an illiterate farmer working shoulder to shoulder with someone with a master's degree. We're starting to recognize that the sector is very important economically. There's been a significant change in policy over the past 10 or so years. It's starting to be built into the poverty reduction strategy papers in a lot of countries that are approaching the World Bank and IMF for funding and for monies. We're starting to understand it's very, very important nuances, things not only such as the link with agriculture, but also the fact that, for example, it's engaging youth. We often look at the sector and see a lot of youth engaged in it, and we ask the question, well, what would happen if these youth weren't being engaged? So it's sort of, you know, it's sort of buying us some time to think more dynamically about, I guess, more long-term and sustainable development solutions. There's a challenge in a number of developing countries in the sense that reforms are being implemented to sort of make mining more of a significant part of economic development planning and economic development full stop. And what tends to happen is there's obviously two branches of the mining sector. There's this ASM branch and there's a large scale mining branch, and they're two very, very different sectors servicing very, very different supply chains. There are very different actors involved. And this is where the tension lies. Because what tends to happen is we in the developing world, we tend to promote large-scale mining first. We sort out the large-scale mining sector first. We overhaul laws, we overhaul policies, taxation codes, come up with a whole bunch of investment incentives to get those foreign miners that expertise in the country to develop big mines so we can export the gold or export the copper, generate taxes for the government, and so on. But what tends to happen is ASM is often ignored in this whole equation, which is very, very important because ignoring ASM has serious consequences because ASM is obviously providing a lot of employment, which large-scale mining isn't, because it's a very capital-intensive industry. And if you're awarding massive concessions to large-scale miners, there are portions of those concessions that the large-scale miner isn't going to use, and that's possibly suitable for small-scale miners to work, because they're different formations geologically. So the two parties are interested in different types of geological formations. So we tend to have this tension because we've sorted out large-scale mining, and by the time we turn our attention to small-scale mining, there's not much land left to deal with small-scale mining. So as you're starting to see in the so-called new mining sector reformers in Africa and Asia and to some extent Latin America, you're starting to see small-scale mining get more attention early on in the reform process. On the issue of informality, I always say that we tend to create informality in this sector. What do I mean by that? Well, we're implementing these bureaucratic policies. We require small-scale miners to get licenses and the requisite permits in order to operate as sort of legitimate miners. And these processes, in many cases, are very, very bureaucratic. So on the one hand, we're attending international conferences as donors, as NGO officials, as government officials, and saying this is a poverty-driven sector of industry. There are a lot of people in here who have no alternatives as far as employment goes. And on the other hand, we're making it very, very difficult for them to get a license. In many cases, charging them thousands of dollars to get a license because they tend to be confined to an informal space. There are all types of not very pleasant actors who are sort of controlling that informal space, chiefs, hope there's no chiefs in the room, but traditional leaders and so on, who are controlling the space, and it makes it very difficult for them to sever ties with these people. So the longer we keep them confined to this informal space, the more difficult it becomes for them to get a license. So it's certainly more than just saying, well, we have this license here, come and get it, and then you can have access to all of this support. There are certainly a number of barriers these people face when it comes to getting a license and the requisite permits to operate as a formal or legitimate small-scale miner. As far as green growth is concerned, I guess the question is, how do we promote a more sustainable small-scale mining sector? And I'm not necessarily saying it's the silver bullet, but Formalization is a necessary first step. And why is that? Well, it's not a case of there being a lack of support for small-scale miners. The World Bank, the bilaterals, the African Development Bank, the UN, they've pledged significant monies to supporting small-scale miners, to provide microcredit, to support them on various with regards to various environmental issues, to address various environmental issues, to improve the efficiency of their operations, to address some of these so-called social ills. But the problem is that this support is available for licensed small-scale miners, and that's it. And when we're talking about sub-Saharan Africa, 99.9% of small-scale miners operate in the informal space because it's very difficult for them to get a license and access this support. So the key for me and a number of other people looking at this sector is to first ensure that they have access to licenses so they can formalize their activities, and then they're certainly in a position to think more dynamically about environmental issues. And I always use the example of Guyana. Now, in Guyana, okay, there are a lot of problems with Amerindians and conflicts with the miners who are operating in the interior of that country, for those of you who are familiar with the Guyana case. But what Guyana has done is they haven't made cost and bureaucracy an issue when it comes to getting a license. So the miners have access to a permit, and as long as they renew the permit after 364 days, or before 364 days, because it expires on the 365th day, then they can mine for as long as they want. The logic being that once the minerals are exhausted in that particular plot, then they move on. But the whole issue in Guyana is that they haven't made cost and bureaucracy an issue. And if we're able to replicate that in various sections of sub-Saharan Africa, where we have made bureaucracy an issue, if we were able to simplify the licensing scheme so these miners can access this support and get a license, then certainly we'll start to see this more formalized sector emerge and it being in a position to, I guess, progress along this new development trajectory. So that's, well, a brief sort of a crash course on ASM. I mean, I can talk for hours about ASM, but I'm going to turn it over to my two fellow panelists here. First, Georgette Barnes, who's going to share an experience from Ghana. And after Georgette, I'm going to turn it over to Jigsa from Ethiopia.
Okay. Thank you, Gavin. I would attempt to talk a little bit about ASM in Ghana. In Ghana, we have large-scale mining, and then we have small-scale mining. But then there is an emerging category called ASM. That's artisanal small-scale mining. And they are not regulated. In our Minerals Act, there is no space for them. There's no provision has been made for artisanal small-scale mining. So, but what is happening is it's on a large scale. As Gavin was saying, I think it employs more than 1 million people. And most of the workers in artisanal and small-scale mining happen to be women. They are not owners of any concession, but they tend to be the ones doing the lowest kinds of jobs, carrying, portering, and washing, and, you know, all the menial jobs. So that's how come that I have gotten interested in artisanal and small-scale mining, because I volunteer for a group called Women in Mining. But the situation is such that we have to do something about ASM, because the effects of their actions is degradation of the environment. And when you turn on TV in Ghana, every time on the news, you're going to see pictures of polluted rivers because of the actions of the artisanal and small-scale mining. You know, all sorts of excavators. And before then, artisanal and small-scale mining used to be rudimentary. It used to be shovel and pickaxes. No, it's not like that. Things have changed. In Ghana right now, we have an influx of Chinese who are engaging in artisanal and small-scale mining. If they are not actively involved themselves, they are funding and they are bringing mini crushers, Chinese-made cheap crushers, what we call the shanfan. And it's easy for people to buy these units, and that's what's causing the degradation. But nobody can regulate them because, you know, it's supposed to be... The Minerals Commission cannot do anything about it. It's actually a crime. So what happens is that sometimes we have task forces and, you know, the security forces go after them. They put them in jail. They seize equipment. But it's done once in a while. And what is happening is that we have noticed that there is no political will, because it seems like sometimes there are big people, some important people, who are actually behind the people doing the work. So that the people working, they actually have people they call sponsors, but we don't know who these sponsors are. So that in itself is a huge problem. So sometimes the police will arrest these people and then eventually they'll get a call and then they are released. So it's become like an underground kind of operation. Meanwhile, it's serving people. People are making, you know, it's a livelihood for them. So we feel that it has to be formalized. But like the slide Gavin showed, the process to have formalization is tedious. Officially, it's supposed to take 3 months. Some people have gone through it, and sometimes 3 years. You still do not have your certificate. So people are not incentive. There's no incentive for you to go through the formalizing process, and it's expensive. So, you know, you don't want to waste your money to go and do it. So what recently we have we had an action dialogue organized by IIED. And what came out was that there has to be an incentive for people to actually want to formalize. There was a suggestion of maybe if you formalize, you know, if you are formalized, you can get access to land that has been explored already. So it's viable. You know that this is what you're going to do, because at the moment it is guesswork. So you go start working on a plot. You think you don't find anything. You just pack up, go find another place. And it's leading to degradation. So to formalize, there has to be an advantage for the artisanal miners to actually think that, yes, I want to do it. So that if you pay to get the process done, maybe you know that by all means, because you're formalized, you'll be given proper somewhere where there's prospects. It's not guesswork anymore. You'd get training, because in Agric in Ghana like that, we have what we call the extension officers, and these extension officers give training. But in mining, we don't have anything like that. We were thinking that a formalization process that gives people training and also helps them, give them business skills, you know, build good business cases for them to be able to access financing would be good. I mean, there are lots of things that we can say, but I think I'm trying to sum it up that basically it has to be formalized. We have to find a way around doing it, and we have to encourage them to formalize it to reduce a lot of the problems that we're having in artisanal and small-scale mining in Ghana. Thank you. I'll pass it on to Jigsaw.
Thanks. So now Jigsaw is going to give us a regulatory perspective.
Yeah. Thank you. Good afternoon. I am Jigsaw Kidani from Ministry of Mining and Natural Gas, Ethiopia. I am ACM director, actually. In our case, it is not ACM. Like any other country, we have also enough resource, and they are different kind of mining license. People engage in this different mining license. We have large-scale mining, small-scale mining, and we have special small-scale mining, which is a mining license structure between the AM, that means artisanal miner, and the small-scale mining. So in our case, the licensing structure is different. Under ASM, we have a separate license, artisanal mining, small-scale mining, and especially small scale mining, which is between artisanal and small scale. And this sector is very important for inclusive growth, green economy, what we call it in today's arena, sustainable development. So we have to make this sector more contributive to sustainable development. I have some major words under this sustainable development. The first one, I will formalization, economic benefit, environment, technology, infrastructure, and value addition. This is what we talk in the morning. But in our case, when I come to artisanal miner in Ethiopia, there are around 1.23 million artisanal miner, which is this one is just recent survey. And these artisanal miners are organized in micro and small scale enterprise, and the other one in cooperative agency. There are some which are not formalized. They are working informally by themselves, but the government are trying to formalize this illegal miner. How we do it is our mining governance is a decentralized government, a decentralized one. We have ministry as a federal, and we have mining bureau or agencies as the regional bureau, and we have also mining bureaus at the province or local. So this is the province or local mining bureau will arrange the concession for artisanal miner, and parallelly as a province we have a micro and small scale enterprise agency, which is government agency that is involved in formalizing and organizing the miners. And we have also cooperative agency at the province level. This is also do the same task as the micro enterprise agency. So these agencies, they will formalize the artisanal miners, and they give artificial personality license to the miners. Then these formalized miners go to the mining bureau, and the mining bureau will demark an area and give to those miners. So when we talk about the SM sector, about inclusive and green economy, formalization is very important. The other one, in our country, the economic benefit from this miner, before 5 years ago, for the last 5 years, the economic benefit from artisanal miner is $1.23 million for the last 5 years. Which contribute $1.23 billion for foreign currency of earnings, and it creates job for 1.23 million individuals, which is directly or actively engaged in artisanal miner, and indirectly from 5 to 7 million people are benefited from this sector. And what we do after, when we make these miners, these informal miners to formalize, it is very easy for us to give a mining extension service, how to rehabilitate the environment, how to manage their enterprise, how to develop a market skill. Then itself for this one, formalization will help to maintain the environment. Regarding the environment, we also promote better technology because as you see, the artisanal gold miners, in a place where there is no scarcity, they carry the gold and they travel to the river towards the gold. So it pollutes the environment. Just to alleviate this problem, what we do is we introduce better technology for the miners. For example, in case of where there is no enough water available to wash the gold, we provide dry washer and so on and so forth. The other one to maintain, since artisanal miners, they travel from one place to the other, they dig the environment, they disturb the environment. Not to do that, what we did is we always, the Geological Survey of Ethiopia will demarcate the proper place that will be mined by the artisanal miners. And after the Geological Survey of Ethiopia doing a survey, then we take the report from the Geological Survey and we go to the region, we demark the area, and we hand over the gold potential area or the mineral potential area to the local mining bureaus. And based on that, the local mining bureau transfer to the miner, the formalized miners. This helped not the environment to be polluted. The other one, we also use a mechanism for our, because artisanal miners, they don't know where to find the exact deposits of the gold. And the other option what we use is there are large-scale mining which are involved in exploration. After they finish their exploration, when they say that this area is not economically feasible to mine, after they have their clearance, what we do is we give this area for the formalist artisanal miners. This also helped not the environment to be policed. The other one, in our country, artisanal miners, I am talking about the opportunities. That means it is not the whole smooth. They have some problems, and I will come to the problem. Regarding technology, what we do is we introduce better technology in order to not to disturb the environment, as I said earlier, like the dry washer and so forth. We also give incentive for the formalist artisanal miner, duty-free privilege to import goods that increase their productivity. Not only this, we also, the government also make to be some assembling factory, placer gold equipment assembling factory are to be established by the private sectors. We have two placer gold equipment assembling factory in our country, so that these are, in terms of accessibility, price, and everything, it will help the artisanal miner. The other one to make the ASM sector more sustainable, we have also in our country value addition. Value addition in case of gemstone mining. We have enough gemstone. We have opal, coumarin, safarin, tourmaline, and so on and so forth. The women, they don't engage in mining because the gemstone topography are very difficult. So we have technical and vocational institution. As that institutions, this institution will try and implement use in cutting and polishing gemstones. So this value addition helps to maintain sustainability in the mining sector. In general, the 6 points, in my perception and in my country's experience, will help to maintain sustainable development in the sector. What challenges? You know, challenges. We have also challenges. Better technology for the miner. We have constraint on this area. We have also constraint of technical knowledge because, as you see in the government office in Africa, there is high turnover. So we want our expert to be to develop their capacity. The other, we have also logistic problem because since our sector is a very decentralized and which is useful to control and monitor the mining sector at the ground as a local level, our mining offices, they don't have logistic. And these are the challenges we face, and these are the previous one are the points that have to make the ASM sector more sustainable. And the sector is very important, as you see from our economic figure, so this sector has to be supported. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have 2 minutes, so I'm going to say a couple more things, if that's okay. Yeah? Let me just wrap up by saying a couple things. This is a very important sector of industry. It's creating lots of jobs. It's contributing making enormous contributions to national mineral outputs. But the path it's following is not sustainable. We do realize that there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed. It'll be tough to formalize this sector because it's a very unique sector. So when we're talking about creating agency and formalizing this sector, it'll be very, very challenging. It takes a back seat in extractive industries development planning because the priority is large-scale extractive industries. It takes a back seat in rural development planning to agriculture. We've chosen to forget about it for many years, even though it's always been the elephant in the room, the most important rural non-farm activity in sub-Saharan Africa and many other parts of the developing world. And a final point is that there's a lot of support out there. I mean, the most recent support are these ethical mineral supply chains, fair trade initiatives, but the bottom line is that it's not reaching these people because they're not formalized and therefore recognized by law. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.